You and I back together again, chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, July the 29th, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. We chatted about Dr. Anthony Fauci's testimony earlier in the day to a congressional committee and whether there's still some lingering doubt among many Americans about the true origin of the COVID-19 pandemic. We also welcomed ABC News legal analyst Royal Oaks, Republican State Rep Gail Mastrofrancesco, and Hearst Connecticut Media's lead columnist and editor, Dan Hart.
Well, would you have thought that you would have woken up today and be tuning in right now at 208 right here on Connecticut Today? Would you have thought that we would be leading with COVID-19 today and Dr. Anthony Fauci and all of this? Would you have? If you had odds as to say that this would be back in the news today, would you have been surprised or not? Maybe yes, maybe no. How about what went down this morning? And there's a bigger issue here than just COVID. I'll get to that in a second. If you were at all tuned in to any portion of the last edition of the outstanding Lisa Wexler show earlier today, 10 to noon on WICC, she was joining in progress portions of Dr. Anthony Fauci. Remember him? Yes, Dr. Fauci. He was questioned today, brought before a congressional committee, about whether or not he had anything to do, once again, with the initiation of or the spread of COVID-19, or more likely or more precisely, honesty about that. And, you know, there is that old phrase that I use all the time on this show, perception is reality, especially when it comes to politics. I don't know if there's a more difficult vein of the human blood, as you will, from to break people of that perception is reality kind of axiom than politics. Especially now with how bipolar this country is, how polar opposite the extremes of both sides have become. And man, you know, part of it had to do with how we handled or didn't handle or what we were told that we could do and could not do some, what was it, five and a half, six and a half years now, depending upon when you start the COVID-19 pandemic. I guess they say it officially started in March of 2020. So that means we would have passed, what, 6 years a few months ago. Some say it was late 2019. But for argument's sake, let's say 6 years. Well, ever since the beginning of that, we've been bickering amongst ourselves and really wondering, did we ever get the straight story? Now, if you recall, those were some of my earliest shows right here on WICC, my second run here at this legendary radio station. And I made no bones about the fact that I thought we were being lied to. I'm not a scientist or anything, but number one, it had to do with China. And number two, the notion that this spread from some sort of a wet market, wet meat market, it was supposedly from what, eating bats or something like that? Remember that? Yeah, sure. Yeah. When you had all these other esteemed scientists from all around the world that were saying, no, this was a lab leak. And the utterly corrupt, under the thumb of China, World Health Organization tried to put the kibosh on those scientists. But to their credit, many very smart men and women kept saying, no, this has all the earmarks of a lab leak. And then we were wondering, did one of our top scientists have anything to do with that, whether directly or indirectly? I mean, obviously, I don't think it's directly, but, you know, we started to hear about these gain of function experiments. And did any U.S. money flow into these labs? And I was saying back then all the time that, you know, if there are this many questions, it can't be good. And if there are this many questions and it can't be good, what are the odds we're actually getting the real story? Well, today, Dr. Anthony Fauci, two things here that don't pass the smell test for me, from what? Little old Paulie here. Two things that for me don't pass the smell test. And I want to get your thoughts on this. Lisa had some of this on her show earlier today, live questioning from Rand Paul, who, by the way, is a physician, is an ophthalmologist, an eye surgeon by trade. So this guy knows a little medical protocol here. And under questioning from Rand Paul and his compadres on the committee there, mostly Republicans, Anthony Fauci invoked the Fifth Amendment over 100 times. Why did he do that? Why? Well, you know, Paul, no. Let's strip the legalese here. Why did he do that? You know, you talk about perception being reality. Weren't you raised, if you were raised in somewhat of a stable household, or even if your household was a menagerie, didn't somebody along the line tell you, well, if you don't have anything to worry about, just be honest? Perception is reality. People still don't think we've ever gotten the straight story here. And apparently Fauci was writing something to do with a memoir here, and he kept a diary, and that diary found its way to Rand Paul and the congressional folks. And Rand Paul and his supporters saying, well, wait a minute, if this was typed on government equipment, then it's the property of the government. So we can split those hairs. And then we were reminded today he was given a pardon in early 2025 by Joe Biden. Why does he need a pardon? Again, perception is reality. If you never did anything wrong, or you did anything, you may have been wrong, but you may have done it in good faith, with a good backbone of all the years that Dr. Fauci served the federal government, back to the AIDS crisis. What do you need a pardon for? But just go up there and say what you know, whether you were active in it or not or whatever. Though he got that pardon in early 2025, some Republicans pursuing years-long campaigns for his arrest suggested he still could face charges for any perjury committed during Wednesday's hearing. And the part now is we find out in some of these diary entries that he wasn't even really sure or was kind of vacillating between the lab leak theory, which so many scientists have said, and the wet market thing. But again, why not just be honest with us? Why not answer the questions? Now, I know you could say, well, it was going to be a trap. Yeah, but hey, here's my question here. Does taking the or invoking, you don't take it, you invoke the Fifth Amendment protection and the Constitution of the Bill of Rights to prevent you from essentially incriminating yourself, becoming a prosecutor against yourself? I know that. I understand that. I never took the Fifth. But we'll start out with this, and we're already getting a boatload of responses to our Facebook question of this Wednesday of the day. Do you think the American people have ever been given all the facts behind the origin and spread of COVID-19? Maybe you do. What do you think? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Love to hear from you. Talk or text, same number, 333-9422. What do you think? Do you really think the American people, even 6 years on now, and maybe we'll find out in 10, 15, or 20 years more, just the way we find out different things now about the space program we never knew, or World War II that we never knew, or Vietnam that we never knew, maybe we'll find out whether or not the American people have been given all the facts behind the origin and spread of COVID-19. Do you think we have, honestly? Or are you one of those people like me that said, a virus? China? Lab leak? And now.
You will respect these proceedings. You were told not to sit at the table. You insist on sitting at the table. And we told you you would not be recognized. You are not invited here for testimony, sir. You are being disruptive. Would you behave this way in a courtroom? No, because the judge would put you in jail. I can't do that today, but I can have you escorted from the premises. So I would say, sir, sit quietly and don't say another word. I said, sit quietly, you are not recognized. Another word and you're gone.
Well, that's it. How about that? That was directed at one of Anthony Fauci's attorneys earlier today. If you missed it right here, live on WICC, Kentucky GOP Senator Rand Paul, who admittedly has been, you know, you can say this if you want to be honest with yourself, and I guess this is partly Rand Paul's background as a physician. He's never believed, as many of you have never believed, and I, frankly, have never believed the wet market scenario here. And people have criticized Anthony Fauci over the years, saying that, you know, some of the money that he and his organization, the NIH, had control over actually went to fester and help cook up this COVID-19 pandemic through what they call gain-of-function experiments, which is basically when you take any sort of a virus or an infection or a or biological agent and you basically give it biological steroids to watch what a worst-case scenario would be. But gain-of-function experiments, and this is all coming back now to me over 6 years, I'm getting flashbacks here, sitting in this very chair 6 years ago talking about this. But it's all coming back like a bad dream, and we're wondering now if, look, what happened happened. But did you ever get the impression from the get-go here that we would get the real story? Because the first thing, you know, when I heard, you know, wet meat, wet market here, where fresh meat, I guess, was sold and cooked and all that stuff, I said, really? It's China. And my theory has always been that they knew it was China, or the scientific brains, that are far more intelligent than I'll ever be, they probably said, listen, and they probably teamed up with the White House, and they probably teamed up with the financial people and saying, well, wait a minute. I mean, think about it, kids. Wait a minute. If we suddenly get out there and say, China, it's your fault, what does that do for a few things here? What does that do for international relations? What does that do if we go out there and blame one of the biggest economic partners we have, and also at the same time, with being a partner, one of our biggest rivals that regularly steals technology from us and other countries? That's got a pretty decent-sized military that could probably give us a run for their money, although a run for our money, although we still dominate in some areas. You really think we'd be honest about that? I said this back then, 6 years ago. I'm like, well, wait a minute. If it is China, we'll never say it. When maybe we should have. But do you think we ever got, are we still not getting the straight story here? Now, you might say, well, maybe there isn't a straight story, Paul. All right. In the guise of science and tracking these virus particles and biological particles, whatever they are, yeah, maybe there was an effort to, and people say this is why President Trump said what he said. Remember, we were going to flatten the curve. 2 or 3 weeks, everything will be fine. They knew that was garbage. Come on. I can't tell you how many people you may remember that I interviewed on this very program who said the same thing, like, come on, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, come on. This is going to last. And they were right. They were kind of right about it. But about right around 4 years. 2 years in and 2 years out. Things take time to peak. They peaked. Sadly, we had millions of people losing their lives here, a lot of elderly. People I know who lost elderly relatives because of this. And then there's a cyclic thing about pandemics. Not me saying it. You could read it anywhere here. But what are your thoughts on this? 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Who was right here? And I know you only heard limited portions of this on the air here, but you can read about it. You can watch almost all the video here if you want to sit down and really captivate yourself with an hours-long hearing here. But why is Anthony Fauci invoking the Fifth Amendment over 100 times? Perception is reality. Perception is, in fact, reality. So listen. Maybe you're saying, like I was earlier, if Anthony Fauci has nothing to hide, theoretically, quote-unquote, what's this 100-plus times invoking the Fifth Amendment? Joining us right now, longtime legal analyst, network level. You've seen him for years on ABC. He's a prominent attorney as well. Royal Oaks joins us. Royal, it's Paul here in Connecticut. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. And, yeah, a lot of people were scratching their heads, right? saying, you know, why is he taking the fifth? Especially since Joe Biden, one of his last official acts out the door, was giving a pardon to Anthony Fauci. And so Senator Rand Paul, who wanted to ask the questions today, saying, hey, why do you need to take the fifth? You don't have any criminal liability. You got to get out of jail free card. Well, apparently the answer, according to maybe lawyers who are whispering in Anthony Fauci's ear, is, well, yeah, the pardon applied to all the stuff I did fighting COVID. But today in 2026, if I tell a fib while testifying, you, Rand Paul, want to put me in prison, so you're going to put me through the ringer going after me for perjury. Mm. That possibly is the reason he is clamming up.
Royal, you know, it's been 6 years. There's been so much written about this, and then these pages, I guess, that set Rand Paul off were given to him. He's not saying how. Is Dr. Fauci in any legal liability, Royal, in your opinion, if he just says, all right, here's the deal. Here's what happened. I thought it could be this. It turned out being that. I tried to maintain calm. Or is that just too dangerous of a legal strategy here?
I don't think he's in any legal liability. We don't know, as you suggest, exactly how the 1,100 pages of diary material got into the hands of the Senate. But we have been told that RFK Jr.'s Health and Human Services Department spent 8 months looking into 11 government computer servers for these notes, and that's where they got them. So, but on your question, probably no legal liability. But, for example, if Fauci's diaries say, oh my gosh, it sure looks like it came out of a lab. For all we know, there was gain of function. The Chinese communists were trying to turn this into a weapon. That's very different from what he was telling the world, which was nothing to see here. Return to your homes. And by the way, stay in your homes and wear a mask. You know, whether he tried to wrongly influence the scientific debate over COVID's origins, did he know that the National Institutes of Health were funding gain-of-function research? So could be very embarrassing testimony for him, but probably not legally liable because of the pardon in his hand.
Yeah, and finally, Royal, flip side here, those who support Dr. Fauci, including part of his opening statement, which I played earlier before this segment, he's like, come on, this is me, for some reason, me versus Senator Paul, he doesn't like me, this is a witch hunt, I think that was used. Does he have any concrete legal basis to stand on this, or is just like, this is him defending himself in front of the nation?
Well, I think it's the latter. You know, he has no basis to refuse to testify to Congress just because he thinks somebody in Congress has it in for him. You know, if Senator Paul wants to put him behind bars, he better have the receipts and have a basis for a criminal referral. Speaking of which, next week, there's going to be a vote, according to Senator Paul, by the committee and then the full Senate as to whether to hold Fauci in congressional contempt. If found guilty, he could go to prison for up to a year for doing that.
Wow. Royal Oaks, ABC News, legal analyst and correspondent. Royal, thank you. We appreciate the time, my friend. Be good.
You bet. Thanks.
All right. Royal Oaks, there you go, right? Welcoming Republican State Rep Gail Mastrofrancesco. 80th District is what Gail represents, mainly Southington and Wolka, to talk about just a horrible story here. A young Bridgeport police officer killed while riding his motorcycle, his girlfriend killed as well by what turns out to be an illegal alien, an illegal, undocumented, whatever you want to say, drunk allegedly, high allegedly, and now a young person is dead and his girlfriend is dead as well. Hey, Gail, it's Paul here at WICC. How are you?
Good. How are you, Paul? Thank you for having me.
Well, you
pleasure to chat.
Oh, Gail, I saw this story and I said, wait a minute, are you kidding me? Number one, somebody driving erratically, who's drunk, who's allegedly high, and we find out, what a shock to me, I'm not putting that in anybody's mouth here, but we find out illegal, undocumented, or whatever. I mean, this is just horrible, Gail. It's horrible.
It's horrible. It's such a sad, sad story. Such promising life for these two individuals taken away tragically because of somebody's irresponsibility. It's really outrageous.
And you find out that she's now, she's a mother. She was working hard. She had two or three kids. Yet she was technically, I guess you could say, Gail, not supposed to be here.
Well, that is true. That is absolutely true. I don't know the story of how she got here or how long she's been here. But in any event, you know, we understand. So she is a mother, but apparently not that responsible.
Yeah.
You have children at home. You're drunk. You're driving. You have marijuana in your system. And tragically, two innocent people are dead. And yes, she is here illegally.
And again, we hear from the top people in this state that any cooperation with ICE, any cooperation to take, you know, quote-unquote hardworking people off the streets and maybe finally send them back to where they came from before they could kill somebody, we hear that we're insensitive and we hate people. It's maddening, Gail. It is, really.
Oh, it really is. We hear this constantly all the time, and it's unfortunately the Democrats spend more time defending people that are not citizens of this country than they do legal citizens.
And Gail, listen, I know people want to come here to this country for all the opportunity it has and potential and get away from some horrible conditions in their countries. But, you know, I was taught, Gail, right from wrong. And there's a right way to do it and there's a wrong way to do it.
Oh, yeah. Listen, we are the United States of America is a beautiful country. I mean, we welcome everybody into this country as long as you go through the process and you do it legally. Excuse me. And we have so many people in this country that are going through that process, that are trying to become citizens, and it's taking them a long time. And then you have these people they just want to buck the system and go in front of these people. Let me just come in and do it on my own, and I'm not going to follow the process. It's awful. I mean, we welcome people into this country. That our country is made of immigrants. But you have to come in here legally. That, end of story. You have to come in here legally.
Republican State Rep. Gail Mastrofrancesco, 80th District, Wolfgood and Southington. Gail, what do you hear, if anything, about this issue when you talk to the people of the 80th District? Are they incensed by it? Do they throw their arms up in the air when it comes to things like this? They hear one thing from maybe the governor on ICE. They don't know what to believe. What do your constituents say?
Well, I can tell you that, excuse me, my constituents certainly support our police officers and they support the immigration authorities. Absolutely. They're really tired of hearing this because we constantly hear that something tragic has happened, just like we saw in Danbury the other day with those two individuals. So mm-hmm. They absolutely support ICE 100%, and at least of the people that I talk to in my district, and they want it cleaned up.
All
they
right.
want something taken care of. And then you hear, mm-hmm. you know, I'm ranking member of the Government Administrations and Elections Committee.
Yeah.
And then we hear of people coming into this country that are voting, that are registered to vote. We don't know if they're voting or not, but the fact that somebody could actually be registered to vote and is a non-citizen is outrageous, and that has to be corrected.
Hey, Gail, thanks, and keep up the good fight. State Rep. Gail Mastrofrancesco, that's the 80th Assembly District, the towns of Southington and Wolcott. Hey, Gail, thanks. Appreciate it. We'll talk down the road. Take care.
Thanks, Paul. Bye now.
All right, there you go. But every week at this time, about around 5:15 or so, Dan Harhurst, Connecticut Media, stops by to give us his thoughts on all the biggest stories out there. Mr. Har, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm doing great. I'm down in this part of the state. I'm in Norwalk.
Yes. Going after what, may I ask?
Well, I have an office that one of our offices here,
yeah.
is the main office, is Norwalk.
Oh, I didn't know. All right. All right.
Hearst Connecticut Media's main office is Norwalk.
So you won't be like throwing chairs or turning over tables or anything, will you, during this visit?
I did that already. I've left the office, though.
Okay. your piece is ruffling a few feathers. I know people read it where you said, listen, we, you know, the car tax thing, like, this isn't easy to get rid of here, and in some ways, you have to keep it the way it is. Talk about that.
Well, there are two issues. One is, if we could get rid of it the way that would be satisfactory to everybody, that would be great. And I think what people generally agree upon is, let the rich pay that $1 billion. I think it's 900 and something million.
Yeah.
Right? Well, just tax, it would end up being a lot of percentage, right? To get $900 million, you might have to tack 1.5 or 2 percentage points onto the high-end tax for those million-dollar earners.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for the rest of us, we would get our free cars, right? So that's great. But that's not politically realistic, and it's probably not economically wise. And even if we were to slap the Josh Elliott desired surcharge on rich families,
mm-hmm.
there would be other priorities besides, for example, education cost sharing,
yeah.
special education. I could think of, we could spend the rest of the time just listing things that the state would find as a priority. So it's not going to happen that we're going to pay for the car tax through a surcharge on rich taxpayers. Therefore, the rest of us have to pay something. The other option is you could eliminate the spending, just spend less.
Mm.
Well, good luck with that. People have tried to spend less. John Rowland, the governor, before he was sent to the slammer, he did a lot of work trying to spend less. And you know what ended up happening? He spent more.
I know.
It's hard, right? So the answer is you have to have, assuming you have that money that has to be collected, what's the best way to do it? My opinion,
yeah.
The car tax is not a bad way to do it at all. And that's where we got into what I wrote, which is within a given town, pick a town, any town. Let's say, you know, pick any town, Milford.
Okay.
Right? I don't happen to know what the Milford tax rate is. I do know that Fairfield tax rate was 28 and it's now 19 after reval. But in either of those towns, if you get rid of the car tax, the rest of all taxes tend to go up by 8 or 9%.
Mm-hmm.
So that owner of that single family house that pays $9,000 is now going to pay 10.
Yeah. When they would have paid a couple of $100 maybe, or maybe a little more on that car tax.
Correct. And so what the reason that this formula works as an equitable formula is because people get to choose what kind of car they drive.
Yeah.
And if you decide you want to drive a Bugatti or a, you know, Lamborghini,
yeah,
or even a very nice high-end Volvo that's brand new, you're probably more than average, and you are going to pay more, but you can afford it, and you're subsidizing the person who is a retired couple with one car. They're maybe 80 years old. Their house is paid for. They would like to stay in their nice house in a tidy neighborhood somewhere.
Yeah.
And they're paying $7,000 a year in property tax, which they can afford. Their mortgage is paid. You want people to be able to stay in a town. You don't want towns to be just enclaves for the rich. So it's a benefit to have an economically diverse population within a town. That's what the car tax brings you. Yes, of course, it's an unfair tax in the sense that people in any city with a high tax pay more than Darien and Greenwich. I get it, right?
Yeah.
Nothing's perfect in this world.
No, absolutely. And finally, man, I got to tell you, this first district congressional race that you and I have been talking about for months now, got to be, Dan Haar, one of the most, at least at the primary stage here, one of the most fascinating races in the country. We just got off another debate here. What are your thoughts on where we stand heading into primary day in a couple of weeks?
Well, I think that not John Larson is going to beat John Larson, right?
Yeah.
But the question is, will Luke Bronin alone beat John Larson? And it's awfully close. Nobody can call it. Luke has a little bit of momentum right now from a variety of things.
Mm-hmm.
He does well in debates. Luke is very good at articulating why hire me.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's had, you know, he's been naval intelligence. He's been the general counsel for the governor. He's been treasury, where they helped develop the Consumer Financial Protection Board. And obviously, he's been the mayor of Hartford. So he's had a lot of that sort of experience. You know, John Larson is saying, keep me on the job because I'm here and I have more influence than a new legislator.
Mm.
And because I'm fighting for you, the people. And that's true. That's not untrue. But it's a tough one. And the two other candidates in the race are way behind. But as Ruth Fortune said last night in the debate on WTNH with our friends Dennis House and Mike Cerulli calling the shots, it only takes 20,000 to win.
Do you think, Dan Haar, if Luke Bronin wins, is there any shot that John Larson tries to get on the ballot through another way? Is there any way he can do this? Can he run on a different line, or is that not possible?
I think that's the Lieberman Party.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or the Weicker Party, a Connecticut Party. Yeah. I mean, is there any way he can do this? Has he alluded to this or not?
Yeah, the problem is that Lieberman was able to do it against Lamont because he was to the right of Lamont.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, a Democrat can't run to the left in the general election. If he loses the primary, Luke is slightly, but ever so slightly, but still somewhat to the right of Lawson.
Yeah.
Now, not on everything, not on Israel, not on Israel.
Mm-hmm.
He's not. So it's huge that he's to the right, but let us assume that they're at least close. Lawson doesn't get voters to the less liberal voters the way Lieberman offered. Lieberman was the more conservative choice.
Sure.
So he goes to Republicans. I'm not saying Lawson doesn't offer anything to the voters. What I'm saying is, strategically, if you're an independent, if you don't like Bronin, why would you like Lawson better?
Good point. Very good point. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media, senior editor and columnist. Mr. Haar, great stuff as usual, and we will chat with you next week. Thank you, sir.
Great to be here.
All right. Thank you, Dan. Great to have you. Yeah, it's a good point there.